Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. 13 years after the nuclear disaster at the Fukushima power plant, the first attempt to remove 880 tons of highly radioactive fuel debris has been suspended. Foreign and defense ministers of Japan and India met to review their joint declaration on security cooperation. Italy brought its aircraft carrier to Japan, joining many other European warships for joint drills in the South China Sea. The U.S. and South Korea started a joint military exercise to deter and defend against a nuclear attack in the area. Russia says it shot down 11 Ukrainian drones over the outskirts of Moscow and 34 in other parts of Russia. Iran's parliament has approved all cabinet appointments under the new president, Pezeshkian, who wants to improve relations with the West. Biden and Harris spoke with Netanyahu this week to motivate signing a ceasefire agreement, while also sending an aircraft carrier to the Middle East. NHK Japan.
Tokyo Electric Power Company, or TEPCO, has suspended preparations for a trial retrieval of nuclear fuel debris at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. TEPCO began the preparatory work as planned on Thursday morning, but it says this has been suspended due to an issue with the installation of a removal device. It says the work will not resume within the day, and TEPCO is expected to reschedule the process. This is the first attempt to remove fuel debris since the 2011 earthquake and tsunami triggered meltdowns at the plant. It's estimated there's a total of 880 tons of debris in the number 1, 2, and 3 reactors. The removal process is said to be the most challenging step in decommissioning the damaged plant. This is due to the debris's extremely high levels of radiation, which hampers the work. The foreign and defense ministers of Japan and India have agreed to review the joint declaration between their countries on security cooperation in a bid to ensure stability in the Indo-Pacific region. The countries held a 2+2 meeting in New Delhi on Tuesday. From Japan, Foreign Minister Kamikawa Yoko and Defense Minister Kihara Minoru attended. India was represented by External Affairs Minister Subramaniam Jaishankar and Defense Minister Rajnath Singh. The two sides discussed the transfer to India of the latest radar equipment used for Japanese Maritime Self-Defense Force destroyers. They agreed to advance joint drills between the Japan Self-Defense Forces and the Indian military. The ministers also agreed to deepen bilateral cooperation in the space and cyber fields. They reaffirmed their commitment to enhancing cooperation among member nations of the Quad framework, Japan, India, the United States, and Australia. European naval ships have become an increasingly frequent sight on the coast of Japan this year, including for the first time an aircraft carrier from Italy. The Cavour made a port call at the Maritime Self-Defense Force's Yokosuka base near Tokyo on Thursday ahead of joint drills. The Cavour is 244 meters long. It departed Italy in June and took part in a large-scale exercise with the Australian Air Force early the following month. The British, Dutch, and German navies have visited Japan this year. European countries are raising their presence in the Indo-Pacific region, where China is growing increasingly assertive. The U.S. and South Korean militaries have started a joint exercise aimed at addressing possible emergencies on the Korean Peninsula. The regular Ulchi Freedom Shield military exercise kicked off Monday. It's scheduled to end on August 29th. This year's edition involves 48 field training sessions and cyber defense activities. One aim is to enhance the capability of the two militaries to deter and defend against North Korean weapons of mass destruction. South Korean media outlets say the government will conduct a drill designed to simulate a North Korean nuclear attack during the exercise. It'll be the first time Seoul has ever engaged in such a training session. Citizens will participate in a drill on Thursday. They'll practice evacuating in response to an air raid warning. The North Korean Foreign Ministry's Institute for American Studies issued a statement denouncing the exercise on Sunday. It described the military activities as war drills for aggression. It said, quote, "The more frequently the U.S. and its vassal countries commit collective military provocations, the stronger the deterrence of justice for neutralizing the threat will become." Pyongyang launched two short-range ballistic missiles during the joint exercise in August of last year. The U.S. and South Korean militaries are currently on alert against similar provocations by the North. Russia's defense ministry says the country's military shot down 11 Ukrainian drones over the outskirts of Moscow on Wednesday. There have been no reports of damage, but Moscow Mayor Sergei Sobyanin said it was one of the largest ever attempted attacks on the capital. The defense ministry said Ukraine launched drone attacks on targets inside Russian territory. It said air defense systems also destroyed another 34 drones in four other regions, including Bryansk, which borders Ukraine, and Kaluga, next to Moscow. Russia has repeatedly been targeted in drone attacks since launching its invasion of Ukraine in February 2022. The defense ministry announced on August 14th it had intercepted 117 drones overnight. There have also been several attacks on Moscow. Last month, a drone was shot down near the capital region, while several crashed into a business complex in July and August last year. Iran's parliament has approved all cabinet appointments under new president Masoud Pezeshkian. His administration has signaled a willingness to improve relations with the West in a bid to have economic sanctions lifted. Wednesday's approval came after days of deliberations. Leading his first cabinet meeting, Pezeshkian was quoted by state media as saying his administration has made a promise with the people and will stick to it until the end. Abbas Araghchi was approved as the Minister of Foreign Affairs. He once served as ambassador to Japan. He also played a key role in negotiating Tehran's 2015 nuclear agreement with six world powers. But the threat of retaliation for Haniyeh's death remains. Tehran has indicated it'll decide on the timing and method after seeing how the Gaza ceasefire talks progress. If Iran does hit back, it's expected to trigger a severe response from the West. Washington's 11th-hour push to get a ceasefire deal over the line in Gaza is coming straight from the very top. U.S. President Joe Biden told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu there's no time to waste in removing any remaining obstacles. White House officials released a summary of phone talks between the leaders on Wednesday. Negotiators in the Middle East are struggling to broker a deal that would also see hostages freed. Hamas says the latest conditions favor Israel. The next round of talks will reportedly take place through Friday in Egypt. Washington is also preparing for what could happen if words fail. The U.S. Central Command says the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier has arrived in the Middle East. The move is seen as an attempt to boost support for Israel, but also to keep Iran in check. Leaders in Tehran accuse Israel of killing Hamas political leader Ismail Haniyeh last month. They vow to retaliate. Israeli troops are continuing their attacks in the Gaza Strip. Local reports say they bombed houses on Thursday in the northern town of Beit Lahia, killing 11 people. And Reuters says at least one person died on Wednesday when Israel shelled Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Troops in some areas reportedly opened fire immediately after telling people to evacuate.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. On shortwave, they can be heard at 10 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp, as well as most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. As the ceasefire in Palestine talks continue, so does the daily bombing in Gaza. An interview with Egyptian journalist Karim El Gawari about the talks. He says that the sticking points are Israel insisting on a continued military presence in Gaza and continuing the war into the future. Palestine is opposed to these demands. Moves to tax the world's extremely wealthy have taken hold in several countries like Spain, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. Their ultra-rich have not moved elsewhere, according to the Tax Justice Network. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
And Israeli strikes on Gaza are continuing. The latest killed at least 11 people in a residential building in the northern Gazan town of Bet Lahia. That's according to Palestinian media. Families in southern Israel have held funerals for former hostages whose bodies were recovered in Gaza this week. They were among 250 taken during the October 7 Hamas terror attacks, which triggered the war. Now, behind the scenes, negotiations over ending the war in Gaza are due to continue in Cairo. So far, representatives from Israel, Qatar, Egypt and the US have been involved, but not the Palestinian militant group Hamas. The technical talks are based on a peace plan suggested by the US in May and approved by the UN Security Council. The plan includes a six-week ceasefire, a partial withdrawal of Israeli troops and the return of hostages held by militants in Gaza. Israel would release Palestinian prisoners and withdraw the rest of its forces. Then the reconstruction of Gaza could begin. Both sides still have their differences, which it's hoped will be addressed by a bridging proposal. But Israel and Hamas are accusing each other of adding and changing conditions. Hamas says it can't accept Israel's plan to keep control of the Philadelphia Corridor. That's a buffer zone along the Gazan border with Egypt. Nor can it accept Israel's demand of a veto over the release of Palestinian prisoners or its plan to search Palestinians for weapons before letting them return home to northern Gaza. There are fears that a wider war could erupt if a ceasefire doesn't come soon. Journalist Karim El Gawari has been following developments in Cairo. Well, welcome, Karim. What's your assessment of where these talks are at the moment?
Well, we have very little concrete news, really. There is still a gap. Israeli wants a continued military presence in the Gaza Strip, and they want to have guarantees that they can continue the war even after ceasefire at a later point. Hamas wants the opposite. They want the Israeli army completely out of the Gaza Strip, and they want guarantees for a permanent ceasefire. There were talks between U.S. President Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Netanyahu yesterday. They're urging him to seal a deal, somehow a bit contradicting the optimism spread by State Secretary Blinken in the last days. There's also some indications from Arab officials from the mediating states, Qatar and Egypt, inofficial ones. Some say the U.S. went too far accommodating Netanyahu with this continued military presence in the Gaza Strip. Another one is saying there's an impasse right now and there's no point in holding high-level negotiations until this is sorted out. And there is also anger at the Arab mediating states about the fact that the U.S. is portraying Netanyahu as the one who signs the deal and is ready for a ceasefire and Hamas as its obstructing party. But so having said all that, we know really, in fact, very little what is happening behind the curtains. Both sides are trying to reach something they were not able to reach in the war. Netanyahu wants to establish a permanent military presence, Israeli military presence, signed off by Hamas. Hamas wants the army to go out. Both sides put pressure on the ground right now. Hamas is, for example, attacking the Netzarim corridor. That's the corridor that's where the Israeli army is positioned, separating the Gaza Strip in the northern and southern parts. Israel, on this other side, is pressuring by not stopping the bombing. issuing more and more evacuation orders now, for example, in the two biggest population centers in the center of the Gaza Strip, Khan Yunis and Deir al-Balah, at the same time. There is only 10% now of the Gaza Strip that is a designated safe zone for the people. So it's a way of pressuring Hamas into a deal simply by creating a desperate situation on the ground for the Palestinians. But that, of course, is a double-sided sword because the Israeli army now is going back to Khan Yunis for the third time. That shows that they cannot really destroy Hamas. Whenever they go in, they leave, they have to go in again. That counters, of course, somehow Netanyahu's claim to be able to eliminate Hamas militarily. And that, of course, increases the need for some kind of political deal.
Okay, thanks for that, Karim. Karim Al-Gawari in Cairo.
Well, it is a topic that sparks intense debate on and off the campaign trail, taxing the super rich. With inequality reaching record levels around the world, the richer are getting ever richer. Now, many say taxing the world's extremely wealthy could help governments finance everything from fighting climate change to boosting the military. Critics say that's easier said than done. But a new report says there's already proof that in some places it's already working.
$2 trillion. That's the amount of extra cash a wealth tax on the world's super rich could raise, according to the report. Cash that could ultimately be used by governments as a budget buffer and to reduce inequality.
You know, the world is facing multiple crises, with climate crisis being at the top of most people's lists. So, but what we tend to hear is there isn't money to deal with the climate properly. What our report shows is actually there is, and it can be easily obtained through a very small and simple tax.
Tax Justice Network says countries can increase their national annual budgets by 7% if they copy Spain's solidarity surcharge model, which levies a tax of those whose net worth exceeds 3 million euros, those people in the top 0.5% in terms of wealth. But critics argue that a progressive wealth tax would encourage the rich to flee their country and invest elsewhere. Tax Justice Network says the data doesn't support this.
In Norway, Sweden and Denmark, after wealth taxes were introduced, there was a migration rate of 0.01% among the super rich affected by those taxes, which isn't even a blip on the radar. Likewise, in the UK, a study estimating what the potential impact of non-dom tax reform targeting the super rich would be estimated a migration rate of 0.02% to a maximum of 3%. So what the data shows is the super rich tend not to relocate if you target their wealth.
And they're not alone in calling for higher taxes. 74% of people who have more than $1 million in assets support being taxed more, according to a recent poll of high earners. And at the World Economic Forum in Davos earlier this year, a group of 250 millionaires and billionaires signed a letter demanding to be taxed more. Among the signatories were the heirs to the Disney and Rockefeller fortunes.
That interview and report were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com. Or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many thanks to everyone who's ever helped to keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please, keep it going. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The government of Nicaragua has condemned the interventionist actions of the U.S. program NED, that is the National Endowment for Democracy. President Petro of Colombia has banned the export of coal to Israel as punishment for its war on Palestine. The European Union warned of the humanitarian crisis in Palestine, where individuals and groups attempting to aid the civilians are under attack. The government of Scotland has suspended all meetings with the Israeli regime ambassadors, demanding an immediate ceasefire in Palestine. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The government of Nicaragua has condemned the interventionist actions against national sovereignty carried out by the United States government through the National Endowment for Democracy, the NED. Quote, Nicaragua condemns and rejects interventionist actions by the United States against sovereign countries, said the foreign minister of the Central American nation, Denis Moncada Colindres. In this regard, the foreign minister reported his nation's position regarding the interventionist actions by the White House, this through the aforementioned foundation, known for its long destabilizing record against sovereign states, and which opposes the imposition and or dictates from the northern nation. He also said that the United States and those countries that he called its dependent partners see their unipolar power in the world endangered due to the push of emerging nations that extend and strengthen a multipolar world. Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, the Democratic Republic of Korea, Libya, Syria, Palestine, China, Russia, Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Bolivia, amongst other sister countries, have fought and continue to resist and overcome campaigns to destabilize their territorial integration and coups d'etat, euphemistically called color revolutions or Arab Spring, financed, armed, and directed by the United States government through the NED and other North American organizations determined to continue being the owners of the world when they are no longer. Washington is no longer capital of the world. This according to Moncada Colindres. The Nicaraguan top diplomat stated that since its beginnings during the 80s, the NED has been promoting by the United States government and has as its objective to hinder the internal affairs of other nations. The first interim president of the organization, Alan Weinstein, admitted much of what we do today was carried out secretly by the CIA 25 years ago. Colombia has officially approved a ban on coal exports to Israel, this in the face of its 10-month-long genocidal war against the Palestinians in Gaza. Colombia's president, Gustavo Petro, said in his statement on Sunday, quote, Colombian coal is used to manufacture bombs that kill Palestinian children. Thus, exports to Israel of thermal coal are prohibited. This according to the decree, which was signed by several ministers, including Foreign Minister Luis Gilberto Murillo. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas expressed appreciation to President Petro for reaffirming his country's decision to prohibit the export of coal to Israel. Hamas said in a statement issued on Sunday night, quote, We express our gratitude for the brave stance of the Republic of Colombia in ending diplomatic relations with the Zionist entity in condemnation of the genocidal it is committing against our people in the Gaza Strip. We call on all countries to sever their relations with this fascist entity, to work by all means to boycott, isolate and impose sanctions, and to prosecute its leaders as war criminals in international courts. According to the Colombian government, one of Israel's largest coal suppliers, the export ban will enter into force 5 days after the decree was published in the Official Gazette. Petro also confirmed the severing of diplomatic relations with Israel and the cutting off of arms purchases. Colombia has also joined the genocidal case against Israel, launched by South Africa in the International Court of Justice, the ICJ. The European Union has warned of the deepening humanitarian crisis in the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank, this amid Israel's ongoing genocide against Palestinians. In a joint statement issued on the eve of World Humanitarian Day, the European Union, the EU, High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Josep Borrell, and Commissioner for Crisis Management, Yanis Lenacek, referred to the Protect Aid Workers Initiative, the bloc established to help local aid workers who have fallen victim while carrying out their missions. Quote, The majority of the applications received through the platform are from the occupied Palestinian West Bank and Gaza, where a humanitarian catastrophe has been unfolding before our eyes over the past 10 months. 2023 was the deadliest year on record for aid workers, and 2024 is likely to follow the same harrowing trend. Emphasizing the crucial role played by the humanitarians during disasters and conflicts, the statement said, quote, "This selfless calling to bring relief, but also hope, to the most vulnerable must be honored and protected. We have stated year after year that humanitarian workers must be protected at all costs, without exceptions. But in this increasingly volatile world, words alone are not enough. It's time for action." The statement came as the bloc's key ally, Israel, continues to conduct indiscriminate strikes on Gaza. The regime's bloody onslaught has so far killed more than 40,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children, and injured tens of thousands of others. Thousands more are still missing and presumed dead under the rubble. The Scottish government has suspended all meetings with the Israeli regime's ambassadors until, quote, "real progress is made towards the end of Tel Aviv's ongoing war of genocide against the Gaza Strip." Foreign Affairs Secretary Angus Robertson announced the decision on Monday and said that Edinburgh would not accept any invitations from the envoys for the time being. Quote, "This will remain our position until such time as real progress has been made towards peace, unimpeded access to humanitarian assistance, and Israel cooperating fully with the international obligations on the investigation of genocide and war crimes." The decision came around 2 weeks after a meeting between Robertson and the regime's deputy ambassador to the UK, Daniela Grudzki, and it sparked criticism in the Scottish National Party. Explaining the reason behind his joining the meeting, Robertson said his view was that, quote, "an opportunity to express the Scottish government's clear and unwavering position on the need for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza." At least 40,139 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have been killed and some 92,743 others wounded, this since October the 7th. Concomitant with the war, the regime has been enforcing a near-total siege on the Brussels Sibir, which has reduced the flow of foodstuffs, medicine, electricity and water into the territory into a trickle.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website works well at radiohc.cu. There's no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. All these times are Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so adjust them to your time zone. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can listen to past shows, find information for online donations. There's a link at the website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The shortwave report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the shortwave report's been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury and staying in a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.